Peggy has reclassified Bellatros, and now you don't need to be an adult to play it in Europe. Plus, Warner Brothers has closed Iconic Studios and locked away an innovative gameplay feature behind a patent. Tonight is March 2nd, 2025, and the Bobby Blackwell Show, featuring your calls and chat comments, is up next. So you would say, even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is that one Akeripper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game, I just don't like it. Billy O.K. says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why. It's not because they hate the fans. It's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash. Later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
And the hogwash marches on. So says Pod Culture in the chat room. Hello, welcome to a Hogwash Marching On edition of the Bobby Blackwolf Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminisce about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwolf. You're joining us live here on the Voice of Geeks Network on this night when other things are on TV that are celebrating other things and getting gold statues and things. I don't know. Thank you so much for being here. We do try to tape the show live just about each and every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, over at the Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us. Interact with the show directly. But this is a podcast. If you can't be here on Sunday nights because maybe you're watching some other TV show or something else on TV, I completely understand. It is Sunday night. And there's a lot of things that always go on, even the ones that aren't on TV. But we are a podcast, and you can also join us on our Discord server. It's a very low-traffic Discord server, so it's not going to overwhelm you. VogNetwork.com/Discord is where you can go to interact with the show and participate and talk about things that maybe we talked about on previous episodes or even suggest things to talk about in future episodes. And I do want to also point out this. I don't have it really in the show roll. I have it in the little thing up here at the top. About the podcast or on the headlines here on Twitch, and it's that we wish Skype well in retirement because this was a very integral part of the beginning of what I'm doing here on this podcast. I've been doing this. This is episode number 927, and all the way back from episode 1 in July of 2005, which is almost 20 years ago. I used Skype, and that was a cornerstone of this show. I was actually, I made this show to be like an AM radio talk show because those were still, people still listened to those in 2005. Obviously, they don't anymore, but some people do, but most people don't. And I had Skype where people could call into the show because I did the show live on internet radio. It was on Shoutcast internet radio for the longest time, until 2018, actually. We didn't move to Twitch until just a couple years ago, which now I realize that's like 7 years ago at this point. But what is time? But we used Skype. People could call in, and I even had a toll-free number because that was still a thing in the 2000s where you could use the toll-free number and call in with your phone, with your landline or your newfangled cell phone, and you could call into the show. And it basically, I had a toll-free number go into Skype. So I would actually receive calls via Skype. Obviously, we don't need that setup anymore, and also a lot of people don't call in anymore. But we did have to switch to Discord. We tried to use Skype. We tried to use Skype when we moved here to Twitch, and it just didn't work with OBS in my setup. So unfortunately, we dumped Skype pretty much January of 2019, unfortunately, and now we would have had to have dumped Skype anyway because Skype is going away in May of 2025. They're encouraging everybody to use Microsoft Teams, which is what all the Skype tech went into, what all the Mixer tech, the Twitch competitor that Microsoft had, Mixer, all that tech is also in Teams, and it doesn't make Teams any better, but it's all there. That's where they poured their resources, and so now we can pour one out for Skype. It was, Tiger Claw says, it was great at the time, except for the audio quality, something it never recovered from. And yeah, so I hadn't used Skype in a long time. I got rid of the toll-free number. I still had the phone number that the toll-free number went to for a bit, but I even then got rid of that. And it's a good thing I did, because then I'd be scrambling now. So I am now I've been Skype free for about 2 years now, and don't have to look back at that. Dark Tatsuya said, Michigans and I have been together so long we started talking on Skype. Skype has been an integral part of a lot of things since it came out, which was about 2003, 2004, something like that. Like it was one of the first voice chat apps that actually had voice chat. And that was a big deal. We had text chat at that time. Like we had AOL Instant Messenger. We had AIM. We had ICQ, which is what I was on. 301-8975 was my ICQ number. Only had 6 digits. That's how early I got on ICQ. And then somebody's going to come in like, my ICQ number was 5 digits. And I'm like, okay, fine. Okay, old man, we'll put you to bed. Skype was the first one that actually allowed for voice chat, and they even allowed like 3-way calling and stuff, which was also a big deal. It wasn't really sufficient for what a lot of gamers use, which is why Ventrilo came around, and now Discord has kind of taken that. But Ventrilo and TeamSpeak were kind of trying to be like the gamer voice chat that that Skype couldn't do because Skype was a resource hog and things like that. So I wish you well in retirement, Skype. At least you lasted longer than a Google product. So there's that. SSJ100Matt, and this is a complete aside. Speaking of AM and as an aside, I only heard recently that apparently some EVs don't have AM on the radio. That is true. It's because the engineers claim that it costs too much money to shield the antenna from all the electronics that are in the car, so they just don't include it. And that's why there's things, and it's a safety feature for a lot of countries that, a lot of times safety information is being transmitted over AM radio still to this day. Especially in terms of in severe weather and stuff, because AM radio waves can travel farther and they're stronger through inclement weather and things like that. But a lot of cars, they're like, oh, nobody listens to AM radio. And people are like, nobody listens to AM radio until they have to. So yes, a lot of, in fact, the car that I have, I had to upgrade the infotainment area in it. And when I bought the car, it had FM and AM radio. When I upgraded the infotainment area in it, I had to pay extra to get the new FM antenna, but the AM antenna was impossible. They did not design the upgrade to work with AM radio at all, and I had to pay an extra amount of money to get an FM antenna because they basically went from an analog tuner to a digital tuner. And so they couldn't use the existing antenna. So they would have to replace it. And most people don't listen to FM radio either. They listen to Spotify or Audible or something on their phone over Bluetooth. So they were like, nobody listens to this stuff. But I still listen to FM radio because I listen to a lot of sports. Sorry about that, pod culture. Trust me, the next thing was going to talk about sports. So pod culture, you're going to be drinking anyway. But yeah, a lot of times in terms of radio, a lot of AM radio stations that are, that have content they really want you to listen to have repeater stations and repeater antennas on the FM dial. So you can actually hear them on the FM dial. So because a lot of people don't have capacity to listen to AM radio, and also AM radio doesn't sound as good because it prioritizes distance over quality. It's at a different band. So I'm not an expert on radio waves and stuff, but that's the general gist. And somebody's going to correct me. If you want to correct me and you're listening to the podcast, fognetwork.com/discord is where you can go in and tell me that I am wrong or educate me, which we're about to do. Tiger Claw says there's also HD radio that nobody listens to, but it's still around. I actually do, because a lot of the channels when I've got in my car, I listen to some channels that are on like the .2. on HD radio, and you can only get them on HD radio. And the good thing about those is because they're not on the main band, they don't have as many ads. It's great. Like here in Atlanta, there's not that many like alternative rock radio stations. So like of mainstream music, that's what I listen to is like alternative rock. So back in the day, And if you're not from Atlanta, you don't understand any of this. But back in the day, when I was, you know, growing up, 99X was this hugely influential alternative rock station. It actually launched bands. It was nationally known in the radio sphere at the time. So 99X does exist today. They brought it back, but it's now an oldie station. So it doesn't actually play new stuff. It now plays stuff from 30 years ago, back when it was popular. So I call it an oldie station now. But it's a main radio station, so it has ads, it has a morning show, and it has all that. One of our other radio stations, which is called, it actually is a classic rock station, so they play rock from the 70s, and it's called The River. And I'm saying that because their .2 station on HD Radio is called The Other Side of the River, and it plays alternative rock deep cuts from the 90s and the early 2000s. And it has no DJs. It has very limited ads, like not ads at all, because nobody listens, so they can't really sell ads for it. It's just a secondary station, but you can only get it with an HD radio. So I know nobody listens to it, but maybe you should, because there's some good stuff there. So if your car radio has the ability to get HD radio, check out some of those .2 and .3 stations on your main stations. You might be pleasantly surprised at what you find on them. Yeah, and Valencia, who is in chat, welcome. Thank you so much for showing up. Says, love 99X back in the 2000s when I did listen. The same people are there. They brought a lot of them back, and they played the same songs that they were playing in 2000s. So, there is good new music out there. It's just when you get to be the age I am, you don't think there are. But there really is good new music. They just don't play them on the radio anymore. You have to find them on Spotify. But anyway, we did have a viewer comment from an episode 2 weeks ago. And he's actually in chat. And I'm going to read this because this is very interesting. It doesn't have to. It has to do with, like, preservation. So this is not directly about video games. But I thought this was really interesting because I've talked about in the past how if you look at, like, old television. And when I say old television, this pains me to say, it's from when I was becoming an adult. So if you look at, like, television from, like, the late 90s, and once again, we're kind of focusing, this came out because of sports, but this also counts for, like, news footage or anything else that was really on television, that it looks, when I look at it now, and they show me footage of a sporting event or a news event that I remember watching on television when I was a teenager, it looks like it's from, like, the 70s. It's grainy, it's blurry, it looks terrible. And I'm like, I know this picture did not look this bad when I watched it when it was on. And SJ Runner Matt, who does actually have experience in the field, actually explained in our Discord why this happened. And I wanted to share this with the class. So he said, in relation to the question from about why early 2000s sport footage looks terrible now, or news footage or television footage. I'm trying to keep pod culture listening because he's about to check out. I know. Back in the late 90s and early 2000s, they started to transition from film to digital or DV tape. When that happened, they had to figure out how to store the digital video. The issue was that much of that footage was compressed for archiving purposes to take up less space because lossless video took up a lot of space. Video compression in the early 2000s did really bad things to video back in that day, and sadly, not many places kept the lossless original version of things. Some networks did, but many didn't because we didn't have as much space to store stuff like we do now. So this is what we're left with. Those original tapes have also degraded over time, so it's hard to go back and restore that stuff that was already recorded at a lower bit rate to accommodate networks and devices. Also, if you go on YouTube and see some clips, what you're seeing is video that's been compressed at least twice because YouTube compresses video as well. So that makes sense. And I have some mini DV tapes, and I know somewhere I have the video from them. Like, I know there's probably a hard drive in this house that actually has the video from them. It's on a computer that's not hooked up right now, but I can probably pull the hard drive out and rescue some of that stuff. Because I have, like, mini DV tapes from E3s in the early 2000s. But I also have the camcorder still with the mini DV tape, but it's FireWire, so it's not like I can pull the digital part. I have to run it through an analog And so that would compress it a little bit more. So I do have those tapes still, and but I don't think I have a way anymore to pull the digital files off those tapes. I would have to hope that I've got a hard drive still that has when I pulled them off last time, which would also be at, I think maybe it did it at 640 by 480, but it might have been even a lower bit rate than that. So, and then YouTube would compress it even more. Twitch would compress it even more if I showed it here. But I have access to some of that stuff. But even that probably doesn't look as good now as it did when I originally recorded it. And Pod Culture says, I have VHS from my high school days. I do too. And I've looked at some of that and I'm like, I don't recall this looking this bad. And I have a CRT TV. Like, I've got a Trinitron that, so that's what I play it on. I'm not up-resing it. And I'm like, I don't recall this looking that bad, but also that's analog magnetic tape. So those degrade over time if you don't take care of where the tapes are also. So it's also not a perfectly clean copy. Anyway, this is a show about video games, right? So let's talk about video games. Let's talk about video games. Let's talk about gambling or simulated gambling or simulated things that people think are gambling but are actually not. So what actually happened in the past is that I don't think we covered it here on this show, but there's a very popular indie game made by a single developer that doesn't want to show his face anywhere. Although he did attend the Game Awards, just nobody knew it was him, and other people accepted his award on his behalf. Balatro. So Balatro is a game, if you haven't seen it, because it's not a huge AAA title, it's a roguelike deck-building game, except you're playing poker hands. That's where the similarities to poker stop, but that didn't stop PEGI, the European classification board, from rating it as PEGI 18 because of gambling, which means that people under 18 cannot purchase the game in Europe. So this was, the Balatro dev was like, there are actual games with loot boxes, with actual gambling, like the EAFC series, that are PEGI 12. They have actual gambling in them with the ultimate teams, with the loot boxes. Pod Culture's gone again because I referenced a sports game. But they actually have actual loot boxes. That's PEGI 12. Balatro, a game that has poker hands in it, but you're not actually gambling anything, is considered gambling and therefore is PEGI 18. Well, PEGI re-examined and they essentially changed their mind. And what they did is they amended their rules so they could change their mind, because the way that the rules that they had, the guidelines that they had set, said that Balatro should be PEGI 18. This wasn't a PEGI screwed up and now they're trying to fix their mistake. PEGI didn't actually screw up based on their rules. They just never accounted for this very specific thing. So I'm going to read you the statement from PEGI that they said, PEGI, by the way, not PEGGY. PEGI age ratings of two video games have recently been the subject of appeals that were handled by the independent PEGI complaints board. The PEGI 18 rating for the game Balatro has been changed to a PEGI 12 following a successful appeal submitted by publisher Sold Out Sales and Marketing. The complaints board concluded that although the game explains the various hands of poker, the roguelike deck-building game contained mitigating fantastical elements that warranted a PEGI 12 rating. The PEGI 18 rating for the game Luck Be a Landlord was also changed to a PEGI 12 following a successful appeal submitted by publisher Fangamer. The complaints board reasoned that the same arguments as above applied. Although the game features a slot machine mechanic, there were no specific transferable gambling skills, and the game can therefore be rated PEGI 12. PEGI acknowledges that the finding of the complaints board appeals panel in regards to amending the classifications of these two games, the PEGI system continuously evolves in line with cultural expectations and the guidance of independent experts who support our assessment process. PEGI strives to apply ratings criteria fairly, consistently, and transparently to ensure that audiences understand the type of content that is present in games. At the moment, any teaching or glamorization of simulated gambling automatically leads to a PEGI 18 ratings. On the basis of these appeals, the PEGI Experts Group will develop a more granular set of classification criteria to handle gambling themes and the simulation teaching and glamorization of gambling in different age categories, which will now include 12, but also keep 18 as an age category for games that simulate gambling typically played in casinos and betting halls. So what they are saying here is they think that their classification was, if it teaches you anything about how to gamble in a casino, it is automatically a PEGI 18. Bellotro contained actual poker hands, and it taught you how to, what the order of those poker hands, what beats what in a game of poker that you would play in a casino. That is why it initially got that in PEGI 18, because under their classifications, to be consistent, that was something that was a PEGI 18. A loot box in Overwatch, I'm using a non-sports game so pod culture stays in chat, a loot box from Overwatch does not have anything that is transferable to a casino. It does not teach you anything about how things work in a casino, which is why that would be a PEGI 12 and available to those 12 and up. So they are now saying, okay, we now understand that there are elements that could be augmented by fantasy, which Bellotro does with the Jokers and all the different types of Jokers. And I don't exactly know much about Luck Be a Landlord. I just know that it was kind of caught in the middle of this. I think because Luck Be a Landlord actually inspired Bellotro, and so that's kind of why they're linked. But if there are fantasy elements that make it no longer applicable to a casino, then they may set it down to PEGI 12. And now they're going to actually have a consistent rule in place that they haven't developed yet. They're going to, that will go forward and make it so people can make games that utilize the elements that you would find in a casino. But if they have enough fantasy elements that obfuscate it away from winning gambling in a casino, then it could be a PEGI 12. Yeah, so congrats to PEGI. Breakman even says PEGI system is apparently better than ours. Like I said, they are trying, if you believe them. Now, you may not believe them. I read the statement directly from their site, but you may not believe them. But if you do believe them, then this is actually a good thing. And there is an appeal. This is why the appeal system exists. This is kind of proof that, they can amend what they do. They realize it's not all black and white. It is black and white at first to them, but they realize that not everything is black and white. And so now there's a little bit of a gray area here in their mind that didn't exist before Bellotro appealed the PEGI 18 rating. It did just get added to Game Pass, so if you have Microsoft Game Pass, you can try it there. I bought it on Switch already, and I think I've got like 40 hours played in it. I actually have won some hands, so I'm actually getting a little bit better at the game, but not really. They also added a whole bunch of card faces of like different games. So like and basically what you can do is you can customize what the King, Queen, and Jacks look like, and they're from different games, some indie games, some AAA games. Like they just added Civilization VII, but they also added Slay the Princess, an indie horror title, and other games that are. But indie but also like some triple, I think Assassin's Creed's in there and stuff like that. So, it's actually pretty fun, and, you should give it a try if you have Game Pass, because a lot of people have lost a lot of evenings to it. All right. So what was the next story? All right. So let's talk about this. And I kind of want to explain what actually is, got released with this. Because it is kind of cool that EA has done this. So Electronic Arts, PC Gamer reports that Electronic Arts just released source code for a bunch of old Command & Conquer games and added Steam Workshop support to games like Command & Conquer 3 Tiberium Wars. So the games getting a source code release, or got a source code release 3 days ago, are Command & Conquer, which is Tiberian Dawn, Red Alert, Renegade, and Generals and Zero Hour. They're being released under the GPL license, meaning folks can mix, match, and redistribute them to their heart's content without EA's lawyers smashing down the door. They are all on their GitHub page as like an archived repository, so you can't modify those repositories, but you can fork them and do whatever you want with them. So for the Steam Workshop, it's getting switched on for Command & Conquer, Renegade, Generals, and Zero Hour, CNC 3, Tiberium Wars, and Kane's Wrath, and Command & Conquer 4, Tiberium Twilight. EA has also gone and updated all of the Mission Editor and World Builder tools so you can publish maps directly to the Steam Workshop. Plus, it's put out a modding support pack that contains the source XML, schema, script, and shader and map files for all the games that use the Sage engine. So that probably doesn't mean anything to you if you're not technical, but trust me, it's a big deal. As per CNC producer Jim Vasella, EA commissioned the Command & Conquer community veteran Luke CC Hyper Feenan to officially research improvements to many of its games in the Ultimate Collection. And this is the fruit of his labor. So essentially, they reached out to the community and said, hey, come in, take a look at our stuff. How can we make it better? And a lot of people are like, you know, this is kind of cool that EA is doing it. That's what Jeremy Matt says. The Breakman says, this is EA. This must be a trap. I want to praise EA for this because they don't have to do this. Now, what does this actually mean for you? If you are not a developer, well, this does not mean you can go to GitHub and you can compile it and play Command & Conquer because it doesn't contain the assets. It doesn't contain the game. So you can compile it and then you can use it with your assets that you have from your Steam directory. So you can make tweaks and stuff, but you have to own the game to do it. They didn't distribute any of the video files, any of the graphics, any of that. It's literally just the code. Now, what this does allow is for modders to really look, and it's even the code is even commented, and they can really look and see what they can do. And they may be able to, and they can even take this code and make new graphics and new things and basically re-release it if they want. But then you wouldn't be able to do that. In fact, the README on there even says you need a Windows 32 machine, you need DirectX 5. To compile some of these. And so it's like you need an old setup to compile it correctly. So there are obviously going to be ways around that. There's going to be people that develop tools to be able to use these. It's also not really a good way to learn. So if you like, I'm going to, you know, look through the source code and learn game programming, it's going to be terrible for that. It is going to absolutely be terrible for that because nobody uses these techniques anymore. These were techniques that were made in 1996, 1997. You're not going to want to do that. But you can look through there and see, like, oh, how did they do things? And you can see that there were stupid programmers even back then. In fact, I'm going to show you, and I'm going to read it here on the stream here. But there's one of the Zero Hour. There was in the game engine source code, and I don't know exactly what this was doing. This was linked to me. There's some commented out code. So if you've never, I'm on Twitch, and this is in GitHub. And if you ever see anything that has two slashes in it, when you're looking at a file that ends in .cpp, which is C++, that's a comment. And if you see it in front of code, it means they commented out the code. And there is actually commented out code that is basically saying, I want to crash the game with this specific message saying, quote unquote, vector is not empty, but should be. And then it actually there's a command called throw, which is throwing an exception, which forces the game to crash. And above it, apparently, I guess the lead developer or someone else looked at this code and said, homework for today, write 2000 words. Reconciling your code must never crash with intentionally putting crashes in the code. Hard. So even back then, they were worried about bad programmers, and Questbuster even says programmer comments can be a goldmine sometimes. And this is the nice thing about this, them releasing the source code, is that you get all of the comments. Whereas if you quote unquote decompile something, you don't actually get the comments, which give you context as to what some of these should be. So you can go through and kind of see what is doing and what they were thinking. And you can find, you know, I've put some funny comments in mine, like, you know, increment this number every time you try to upgrade this and it doesn't work and stuff like that. So you can find some funny stuff in here. in source code. That was the one that got linked to me. But yeah, so you can find all that on GitHub over at, what is the GitHub name of this? I'm trying to remember. I clicked on a link to get here. So it's Electronic Arts over at GitHub, Electronic Arts, and stuff like that. So you can find all that stuff here on their GitHub page. And if you don't understand programming, you're not going to understand much of what it's doing or much of what you're looking at. There is some assembler in here for some things, and then a lot of C++, where, you know, just separated out files. And you're gonna see like a lot of things that are like, it's a lot of comments and then not a lot of code, but they spend a lot of time like explaining what they're doing. And all the stuff that gets into how, you know, things are built. I'm scrolling through a file that I believe is like the base building bases and what happens when you build bases and all that stuff and how it stores everything. So you can go through there and it'll kind of give you an idea, but you're not really going to learn a lot about game programming looking at code from 1996 that nobody runs anymore. But this is still a great thing for the modding community. It's a great thing for preservation. It's a great thing for archival. And kudos to EA to reach out to community and, I guess, pay someone. I mean, I doubt CC Hyper worked for free, but paying someone to actually do this and do this preservation. So I know we will talk crap about EA when they do things bad, but I want to point out when they do things that are really good. Speaking of companies that are doing things bad, Engadget reports that Warner Brothers Discovery made sweeping cuts to its games division, closing three studios and ending development on its planned Wonder Woman project. Monolith Productions, Player First Games, and WB Games San Diego will be shuttered due to a disappointing 2024 for WB's gaming business, according to an internal memo from JB Perrette, the company's CEO and president of Global Streaming and Games. Monolith Production made two well-regarded Lord of the Rings games, Middle-earth, Shadow of Mordor, and Shadow of War. The studio was going to apply its popular Nemesis system from those titles to a Wonder Woman game, which was announced back in 2021. We're going to get back to the Nemesis system in just a little bit, because this is going to be something that's going to be interesting for the next decade or so. WB acquired Player First Games just last year. The team was responsible for Multiverses, a platform fighting game that reached 20 million players in its early days before dwindling to a planned shutdown of the online services when its fifth season ends this May. WB Games San Diego was working on a AAA free-to-play gaming. In December, Warner Brothers Games also announced that it would lay off employees at WB Games Montreal, as well as pulling back on the studio's game Suicide Squad Killed the Justice League. According to an internal email from Perrette, WB's gaming efforts will be focused on four of its properties: Harry Potter, including Hogwarts Legacy, Mortal Kombat, the DC Universe, and Game of Thrones, but not Wonder Woman. Quote, "We need to make some substantial changes to our portfolio and team structure if we are to commit the necessary resources to get back to a fewer but bigger franchises strategy," unquote. So I know a lot of people are going to be like, oh, David Zaslav is the problem here. Actually not. The actual person is David Haddad. He was the one that was in charge of the gaming stuff. So what we have learned is that Davids should not be in charge of companies. And I'm okay with saying that, because we've also said that Bobbies should not be in charge of companies. So I've been having to sit and hear about how nobody named Bobby should ever be in the charge of anything in the gaming industry. So now you Davids get to join Bobby over here in the not should be in charge of the gaming industry. Questbuster says the reasons why this happened is another textbook case of leadership having no idea what they really have. And it's all numbers. It's all the spreadsheet. It's all like what's on the spreadsheet. And this is why art and business really suck when they are together. Because great art takes risks. Art is about doing things that's risky. All the best things that you think of when in games and movies, they're ones that took risks. Great business minimizes risk. It's the exact opposite. if to run a successful company, you need to minimize risk. And when you get MBAs in charge of art projects like video games, which I know people are like, video games aren't art, they're consumer products. And well, there you go. If we're going to say that video games are not art and they're consumer products minimize risk. So you're not going to get risky things out of somebody when it's an MBA. They're looking at this because if it's too risky, they're not going to do it. And that's kind of what they had here. Questmaster says, Shadows of War apparently didn't hit internal numbers, but Monolith wanted to make something else other than another Middle-Earth game. They worked on that new thing for 4 years, and then WB killed it. And what Monolith had done is they patented, they got this system that they made called the Nemesis system, and you heard about it in the last thing. This is the very interesting thing that now is going to affect the gaming industry, because it's an innovative concept that sounds like, you know, it's something that people could implement, but now you can't because Warner Brothers patented it. It's the Nemesis system. And Gadget reports that Warner Brothers Discovery recently shut down a trio of studios, including Monolith Productions. This has put one of the coolest game mechanics of the 2010s in limbo. Middle Earth Shadow of Mordor's excellent Nemesis system is locked behind a patent owned by Warner Brothers all the way until 2036, according to reporting by Eurogamer. The Nemesis system was featured in both 2014's Shadow of Mordor and the follow-up Middle Earth Shadow of War. Simply put, it's a gameplay mechanic in which enemies remember previous encounters with the protagonists. These antagonists, typically orcs in the Lord of the Rings games, would use these humiliating memories to fuel their thirst for revenge as they rose through the ranks. This mechanic also worked both ways, so enemies would remember besting you in a previous encounter. It was the best part of those two titles, and Monolith planned on bringing back the mechanic for Wonder Woman. This system is now lying unused. Warner Brothers Discovery patented the system in 2016. The patent is still active until 2036, as long as the company keeps up with the associated fees, and you know this is one they will. It's worth noting that in the 9 years since patenting the system, it's only been used in a single game, Shadow of War, which came out in 2017 and was already in development when Warner Brothers went ahead with the patent. So it remains to be seen if they're going to do anything with the Nemesis system. It had 9 years of heavy game development to make use of it across its entire IP portfolio, but it didn't. In that time period, plenty of Batman games and Hogwarts Legacy all came out. These would have surely benefited from the unique mechanic. So, like I said, they are still working on Harry Potter, Mortal Kombat, DC Universe, and Game of Thrones. Maybe the Nemesis system could be in there, but they laid off all the people that knew the Nemesis system. So, as Sharon Matt says, Monolith also developed Matrix Online and Tron 2.0, which Matrix Online was interesting. A lot of people look at it with rose-colored glasses. We made fun of it a lot, Matrix Online, because I think, was that the game that had the blocky wheels and stuff? It didn't even have round wheels, or was that one of the other Matrix, Enter the Matrix? Was that Enter the Matrix? I don't remember. But Matrix Online was definitely, it was an experience. It was a time. So yeah, there are people that are like, oh, I'm an expert in the Nemesis system, but now you have to pay Warner Brothers if you want to use that mechanic. So this mechanic, I just explained it to you. We're like, oh, well, you know, I could think of a way to do that. But now, if you independently put in your game that mechanic, Warner Brothers can sue you for patent infringement. Even if you don't use any of the code that they did, if you just use the same algorithm they did that is described in the patent, which you can read the patent, but if you infringe on that patent by developing it yourself before 2036... you're kind of screwed. That's why I believe they are absolutely going to continue paying the fees on that patent, because that is a major payday for Warner Brothers if they decide that they want to go after someone who has kind of the same system. And so other people would have to work around the system. Even though the gameplay mechanic is amazing, it sounds really great on paper, and it worked really well in the two games that it was used in. But... now you can't. That idea is now locked away. Breakman asks, why does Warner Brothers hate us all? First Batgirl, then Coyote versus Acme, now this. Because we are not buying what they're selling us. That's why. We, as a collective we, are not buying what they are selling. And so they are doing things to make it to where they only sell things we want to buy. So that's why they're doing this. Now, could they license out the Nemesis patent? Sure, but they're going to probably want a pretty penny from it. Wonder Woman was going to use this patent. This is not the first time an innovative or a common sense gameplay mechanic has been patented. For the longest time, people were wondering, you know, during these load screens, why can't I play, a mini game or something during the load screen? It's because Namco patented that in the 90s. They patented, and for 20 years, Namco had the exclusive patent on when you're on a load screen, you can play another game. So, like, you could actually, like, in Namco games, I believe, on load screens, you could play, I think, like, Ridge Racer, you could play Rally X on the load screen while it's loading Ridge Racer. That was something they had patented, and nobody could do that until, like, 2017 or 2018, which, by that time, we don't have load screens anymore, really. Because now storage is so fast, we're limiting load times and stuff like that. So, that was a patent that existed. And it was around for 20 years. Another patent that existed for our music game friends. And by the way, Darkseid says it was Galaxian, and if you beat it before it was done loading, you unlocked more cars. So that's what it was in Ridge Racer. But anyway, Namco had that patent. For our music game friends, Konami actually had the patent on rhythm games for the longest time. And specifically, I believe what they had the patent for was, if you didn't, it was your note changing the effect of the song. So it was specifically like when you hit a key, or maybe you hit the wrong key, some other sound came out that wasn't what you played. Or what you hit did actually conform to the song, and if you didn't hit anything, you didn't hear things. That specific mechanic was patented by Konami. And you're going to say, well, Bobby, Guitar Hero came out. Yes. And Guitar Hero paid Konami to license that patent. And you can even find that information in the manual, because back then when Guitar Hero came out, we had manuals, right? That information actually was in the manual about the patent that they were licensing from Konami to be able to do that, where when you hit a button, if you hit a wrong button, it played a sound that was bad, like the guitar strum didn't strum right. Or if you hit it right, you would actually hear the actual sound. That was part of a patent from Konami. So you could still make a rhythm game, but you couldn't have your input from match what you heard. Or it had to basically, not affect what you actually heard. So you could still create a rhythm game, but you just couldn't have the audio be reactive to your input unless you paid Konami a licensing fee, which other rhythm games did. Guitar Hero did. That patent expired, and that's why now you can make your own game that has that mechanic now, but you couldn't until the mid-2010s, late-2010s, something like that. So, software patents suck. What doesn't suck is a music break, so I can actually stop talking for a little bit. We're going to play a piece of music here on from Overclock Remix here on the stream. You won't hear it on the podcast. It's just going to go right into the second segment. And then there is no Orange Lounge Radio tonight, by the way. They will be back next week. Rob is coming back from the Star Trek cruise. He is flying back today. He flew through Miami Airport and couldn't understand it. And when I've flown through Miami Airport, I can't understand it. Everybody tells me Atlanta Airport's confusing. You obviously haven't been to Miami's airport and realize that if you want to go to a specific gate, you have to go through a specific checkpoint. Anyway, Rob is on his way back home. He's not going to be able to make it tonight for the show. So OLR will be back next week. So if you want to just, if you want to call in, obviously we don't have Skype, but we do have a Green Room voice chat channel over in Discord, and we can chat about any of this stuff. But we're going to take a quick music break right now. You're participating with the Bobby Blackwell Show and the Voice of the Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VogNetwork.
Hi, I'm the Tiger Wizard or Katie Adkins of D4 and Quit on the Macabre. And when I'm not being murdered in a closet, I'm participating in the Bobby Black Wolf Show. Please don't murder me.
That was not the bumper I had planned on playing tonight. However, in the Overclock remix that I played tonight, everybody was like, I'm getting too many Cooks vibes from it, which I wasn't getting it. But I was going to, I swapped out the bumper so I can play it because Sester was like, what are the odds? I'm like, no, I had a minute to find that bumper and put it in the playlist. So, yeah. So, and also, unfortunately, like, Katie Adkins, that's not what she goes by anymore. She's not even on that show anymore. She's changed her online presence, all that stuff. So it's an old bumper from like Dragon Con 2019. But she was in Too Many Cooks. So the joke there, by the way, is for people that aren't watching on Twitch, that is actually the actress that gets chased around in the Adult Swim really weird infomercial. She's actually the actress that's chased around by the old guy with the hatchet in Too Many Cooks. It was an Atlanta production. She was a local Atlanta actress. She moved to Los Angeles a couple years ago, so that's why she's out there now. So, and the Breakman asks, has anybody else been trying to figure out what is on Bobby's shirt? So, obviously, you know, I'm on Twitch. It's a radio show. Trust me, there's not that much visual stuff here. But people were like, what is on Bobby's shirt? So I'm going to point it out because just in case you're in Atlanta, you should go visit this this place. It's called Battle and Brew, and it's basically an esports bar. So pod culture's already gone. But instead of having like ESPN on all the TVs, they have Twitch on the TVs, and they've also, it's a LAN center. They've got board games. They've also got really good food. They've got a bar, things like that. So it's and the what they've got on their shirt is they've got a Mario with a beer and a burger. He's carrying that. And then there's a TARDIS on it as well. And it's all 8-bit. So, and the reason they've got the TARDIS is because they, the entrance to the restrooms is a TARDIS. And they do actually have it positioned to where it is bigger on the inside. Just the way that they've kind of positioned it. Where the TARDIS entrance is. So you actually go in and it's bigger on the inside. They've got a picture of all the doctors on the inside and it actually looks like the inside of the TARDIS until you go into the actual restroom. So that's why they've got a TARDIS on there. They've got Mario, an 8-bit Mario on there. And it's a gaming restaurant. There are two locations in the Atlanta area. So I'm going to recommend that you go to the original location if you are in town. You're going to find two. There's one in an area of Atlanta called Sandy Springs. That is the original location. That's the one you should go to. There is also a one in the Battery, which is kind of a mixed-use complex. It is also where the Atlanta Braves play, so that's where the Braves Stadium is. They have one there. It also has the TARDIS that you know that's bigger on the inside. They've got board games, but they also have ESPN on all the screens. It's basically, it is a normie version of the original location because they are in an area that's the clientele because it's a lot of sports fans. You can go there after a Braves game, get a drink, and see other baseball games going on, but you also have video game paraphernalia around you. So that's what's on. I've got the shirt. It's called Battle and Brew, and they've got two locations in Atlanta. Go to the original one. And Breakman says, sports and video games sounds fun to me. And like I said, they have esports on at the original location. So, like, you would see, like, League of Legends matches and Overwatch matches. That's what would be on the TVs. Just random Twitch streams. They even had, you know, speedrunning stuff when that was, if that's going on. Or they just have random Twitch streamers. I actually did a show from there, from that original location many years ago. Back before we were on Twitch. So this was a radio show. I actually did a show from a VR meetup there at Battle and Brew. So I've actually broadcast from Battle and Brew. And so they've been very good to us and very good to me. So let's see, I'm going to check to see if anybody's taking calls or anybody's in the green room. Cause I haven't had Discord open in a little bit. I don't see anybody in the green room. Okay. I completely fine with that. Like I said, there is no Orange Lounge Radio tonight. They will be back next week. They're going to have 2 weeks of gaming news to comb through. So what you should do if you are on our Discord server is maybe you should tell them in the OLR chat channel which of the big news stories that have happened since they've been on last you would like to get their opinion on. They're going to run through a lot of the news that came out in the last 2 weeks, but they're not going to spend as much time on it. But if there's something you really want them to talk about in a little more in depth than just a, oh, this is what you missed, maybe point that out in their chat channel. Rob does not know that I just asked for this, so be nice. He's in the air right now or something, so he's not even listening. That's what you can do to kind of help them. But I will also be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here at the Voice Geeks Network Twitch channel. We will be together again, and we will see ourselves then. And, you know, maybe we'll have played, like, there's a lot of great games coming out this month. There's a lot of games coming out this month. I can't remember what it, like, there's, March is going to be stacked. And I was going to actually saying that the PlayStation Plus Essential, like those games, I'm like, yeah, I would play all three of the games that are coming out on PlayStation Plus Essential, because that's all I pay. I don't pay the higher tiers, but I have PlayStation Plus Essential, and I'm like, all three. They're like, Dragon Age: The Veilguard is coming out, and then on that, and then I think the Cowabunga Collection for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is one of the three, and then I can't remember what was the third of the three. It was another one. I'm like, yeah, I'd play that. I can't remember. So I know it was Dragon Age: The Veilguard, the Cowabunga Collection, and then something else. I'm stalling because somebody in chat's gonna be like, "Oh, it's this dummy," and I'm also trying to scroll to see where I can find where they actually mentioned this in our chat room, and I haven't found it yet. It's Sonic Colors Ultimate. So yes, as Jeremy and Matt finally got there, Sonic Colors Ultimate is coming out on PlayStation Plus Essential. So this is the low tier, so I can try Sonic Colors. That'll make some of our fans happy. Yeah, and Breakman says, Cowabunga Collection was fun. There are some bad ones, but the whole collection, collection is good. And hey, I'm already paying for PlayStation Plus Essential, so why not give it a shot there? So let's see, the biggest games that are coming out. I pulled up a thing because, like, there were some big names that I was. Oh, Suikoden is coming out. The Suikoden 1 and 2 HD Remaster come out this week. So you can get a current version of Suikoden. MLB The Show 25, for those that like that. Unfortunately, not to Game Pass, so probably not going to be playing that. Xenoblade Chronicles X Definitive Edition, that's coming out this month. So you're going to want to check that out. And then I think, does Expedition 33 come out this month? Or is that next month? When does Expedition 33 come out? I didn't see it in this thing. No. Okay. I guess Expedition 33 is not. I thought it was. Maybe that's April. But yeah, Xenoblade, Suikoden, we're going to be eating pretty good. And then obviously, like, Pirate Yakuza in Hawaii just came out. Civ 7, for people that want to jump into Civ 7 before it's ready, that just came out. So we got a lot of stuff to play. We got a lot of stuff that we can talk about. I will be back next week, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, here on Sunday night, right here at the Voice Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us. Interact with the show directly. We are also on, you can find me on Blue Sky at BobbyBlackWolf.com on Blue Sky. I had my first viral OMG, a hit post, LOL. Had to mute notifications on my phone because, unfortunately, Blue Sky notifies you on replies and likes, and you can't separate them out. My cats went viral on Blue Sky, and it was not even Catter Day. They went viral on, like, Thursday or something like that. Friday. They went viral on Friday. It wasn't even Catter Day yet, but I got, like, 400-something likes, which is actually, I think, the most I've ever gotten on a post anywhere. Like, even on the bad site, I don't think I ever got 400 likes, but I just put my cats on the screen. This is a post that's on Blue Sky of my cats wishing everybody the best weekend that they can have, that they can have, given all the circumstances. But yes, so BobbyBlackWolf.com, you can see more pictures of my cats. I got new kittens, so they're 6 and 7 months old, and now at this point. So that's where you can find me at BobbyBlackWolf.com or on our Discord server, VogNetwork.com. blue sky.com/discord. If you just joined Blue Sky, you can also follow at vognetwork.com on Blue Sky, and there is a starter pack. And what a starter pack is on Blue Sky is it is a list of accounts and feeds that you can follow, and you can just hit one button and you can follow those accounts. And we have a starter pack for the Vogue Network, so you can actually automatically just hit one button and suddenly you're following all of the show hosts from me, from Orange Sound Radio, from Anime Jam Session. You can follow them. It follows them automatically. Even some of the other community members that we have here, you will follow them automatically, and you can kind of get started on your Blue Sky journey. So if you just joined, you can go to at vognetwork.com on Blue Sky, not .bsky.social, but actually the .com. That's how you know something's verified. Follow all of them as well there, and kind of start your social media journey on Blue Sky. So if you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone. The show is not for everybody, but it may be for somebody who does not know about it yet. But that is going to be it for me tonight. Stay tuned. We are going to be rating someone after the end credits for those of you on the live stream. But thank you so much. We will be back next week with both me and the return of Orange Lounge Radio after the Star Trek cruise. It's going to be an amazing night next week. Just like it was amazing tonight. So thank you so much. I'm going to hit the button so I can get out of here and we can end the show. So thank you so much for being here. Please take some time for yourself. Pay attention to things going on around, but don't hurt yourself over it. I'll see you next week. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the Vogue Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom. Although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Blackwolf Studios.